From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour must be made by next Thursday, November 30th. That is the deadline for the Rochester Rhinos to raise $1.3 million, or the minor league soccer team will shut down its operations. And that's according to team owners David and Wendy Dworkin. They issued a call to action to the greater Rochester community, a call for more fans to purchase season tickets, for businesses to step up, for other ways to close that financial gap. WXXI's Caitlin White reported that during the Dworkin's news conference, some people were crying. The 22-year-old franchise has devoted avid fans, but are there enough to sustain the franchise in Rochester anymore? And if not, what becomes of the stadium that was built to feature the team? The Rhinos suffered through their lowest season attendance this past year, and the Dworkins have said that maybe Rochesterians take the team for granted. In the early days playing at Frontier Field, the team would pack a minor league baseball stadium, but that same interest has not carried over to the Rhinos' own field that's now 11 years old. Should local government step in with more funding? Can the business community find a sponsor to help keep the Rhinos on the field? Are there enough fans to consistently fill or at least sell more seats, more tickets in that stadium? Sports journalist Scott Petoniak recently pointed out that at one point, the Sports Business Journal called Rochester the best minor league sports town in the country. But things have changed. From women's soccer to the Rochester Rattlers, Rochester is losing its local teams. And maybe you think that's fine or appropriate, or maybe you're desperate to keep them here. My guests this hour have a lot to say on the subject, and they include Wendy and David Dworkin, owners of the Rochester Rhinos. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks very much.
Also here with us in studio is Scott Petoniak, that local longtime journalist that I was quoting. I usually crib off Scott's notes when we talk sports. Nice to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
And on the line with us, I think, is Jeff DeVeronica, who's also a longtime local journalist and a reporter for the Democrat and Chronicle. How are you, Jeff?
I'm good, Evan. How are you? And you know, I'm glad we're talking about this, but I'm going to mimic the Rhinos owners real quick and say, we can keep talking about it for the next few days, but if the fans and the business in this, businesses in this town care, they're going to stop talking about it and do something about it. Because without that, in the next 9 days, it's over. And I think a lot of people will regret that. And I've covered the team since day one, so I'm pretty passionate about it. And so I'm looking forward to talking with you guys the next hour.
Yeah, and Jeff's right about that. And some of our listeners might say, well, hey, they're holding us all hostage. But I think Wendy and David said from the beginning, they don't want to look back. Why don't you guys tell our listeners if you missed the news conference, which was, when did you have that conference?
Last Wednesday.
So it was a week ago. If you missed that, the point, Wendy and David, is to at least let people know in advance that this is coming, right?
That is correct. I don't want anyone to feel blindsided or say they didn't know, which, you know, we've been very upfront with stakeholders at all levels since we took over the team, letting them know how things were going, what we thought we needed to level the playing field to give the team the best chance at success. So if it I hope everything works out and we are working up to the 11th hour to make sure that it does happen. But if it does not, we have been honest with everyone and didn't lead anyone astray.
Okay. Well, and I think just to add to that, I think from our perspective, what we didn't want to happen was one day someone reads or hears on some media site that the Rhinos are shutting down or relocating, and everyone's like, oh my goodness, I didn't know how bad it was. And we thought about it long and hard, and we made the decision that we should at least let everyone know as clear as possible, although we think it's been out there since the beginning, but this was sort of that last possible wake-up call and say, look, this is the reality. We have to exercise our player contracts by November 30th, and if we don't, we have to release our entire team.
In a moment, we'll go through the kind of breakdown that the Dworkins put out there as a possible path to that $1.3 million. But let me just start by asking Wendy and David, since last week, have you seen a surge in season ticket sales? Have you seen anything in the last 6 to 7 days that tells you that this could happen over the next 2 weeks?
Well, there's definitely been an increase in season ticket sales, even from people that may not necessarily live in the market anymore. So there's definitely an increase. There's been some positive business developments, but we still are not at the finish line. We still have to work diligently. We still have a ways to go.
Well, and she says it always so much nicer than I do. Mm-hmm. We've been very pleased with the season ticket holder piece. That has been, there's been a decent amount of people. Again, people don't even live here. Obviously, for us, the Jersey sponsorship's a big deal. Nashville, which is the team that's starting this upcoming season, just got a deal with Nissan that's based there. That was just announced today. So that's a big one for us because that's really the reflection of your community. When you're out playing in these other markets, who's across your jersey is sort of the biggest asset that a team has. So we've had some great corporate. Wendy and I have had a lot of good conversations with some CEOs that have supported us at a smaller level or not at all. So we're making some progress, but if we extrapolated sort of right now the last 7 days and divided that by what we need, we're not there. Again, Thanksgiving is coming, so hopefully the next day or two plus next week we'll get us there. But it's not for lack of trying on our part.
And how many season tickets have you sold in the last week?
That's a great question that I don't have a good answer for, unfortunately.
It's changing
daily. Yeah, I don't.
Not, hourly,
not,
actually.
Not enough.
Right.
Not enough. Right. Not even nearly enough.
Right. No, that's true.
I mean, that's what it's going to take.
Right. It's definitely not that. That's true. Yeah.
And so we're going to go over this breakdown here, but let me ask Scott in studio here. I mean, I remember having never been to Rochester in the late 90s and yet hearing through as a soccer fan at the time and sort of a budding young journalist that there was a minor league baseball stadium that was getting 10,000-11,000 people a game with an A-League or whatever the league was at the time for the Rhinos. And I'm thinking, what an amazing place to be that must be for soccer. And last year, I think average attendance was down around 2,000 a game. Is that right?
Correct.
Just
paid.
Over 2,000.
But paid attendance.
Paid attendance, just 2,000 a game. So, Scott, does that tell you that this is no longer viable, or do you think that maybe this community needed a wake-up call?
Well, I think a little bit of both. I think it needed a wake-up call. We did kind of take this for granted. I mean, Jeff and I were both there for the start of this, covering this, and it was an incredible atmosphere there. And this is not, you know, I applaud, you know, Wendy and David for what they've done, because in reality, they inherited a mess. And people don't really know just how bad it was, and they've tried to infuse some life into this. But it was really going back then. And I think, you know, you had some other things going on, and Jeff will can attest to this. You were in the A-League, and there was that carrot of MLS soccer.
Correct.
Always hanging over you. And I mean, and this is a team that beat the big boys, you know, in the tournament. So you had some other things going on there. But this is pretty dire, and there's historical precedents for this, obviously, with our baseball team being saved with Maury Silver leading the shareholder drive. But that was what was known as the 72-day miracle. This is a pretty onerous deadline when I look at it.
Okay, and so season tickets start at what price? What do people have to pay?
If you want a adult GA season ticket, it's $150 for 17 games, includes a replica jersey, and that breaks out to $8.80 per game.
And you can get any season ticket with a $50 deposit. And the disclaimer is that if we don't play in 18, obviously everything gets refunded.
All right, so 50 right. bucks as a deposit for season tickets
correct.
That you will get back if the team
correct.
Doesn't
and,
exist
and,
next
and that's
year.
The lowest that's of correct. All the season tickets in GA.
Okay, before we get to this breakdown then, and we'll get everyone on the panel's thoughts on how this path forward might work, I'm going to take our first phone call because it's going to set us up for this conversation about whether we're viable or not. And Bruce in Irondequoit wants to talk about the stadium. Go ahead, Bruce.
I'm wondering how much of the costs that you're dealing with have to do with the fact that a new stadium was bought. When originally we agreed and voted on the money for Frontier Field, it was as a multi-purpose field, both hosting both the soccer and baseball. Then all of a sudden now we had to have this other stadium that now we can't fill. So how much of the issues are in regards to the fact that the new stadium was bought and how much it costs to operate and maintain that versus what it would have been if you were cohabitating with the Red Wings?
Yeah, Bruce, good question. Thank you. And by the way, obviously Wendy and David didn't own the team when this was all happening, but I'm going to piggyback off Bruce's question and ask
Evan,
you.
Can I say one thing?
Go ahead, Jeff.
I can back me up on this. Scott, Frontier Field was hatched with the idea for it to be a baseball stadium. There was no glint in anyone's eye about the Rochester Rhinos or soccer in that stadium when public money was allocated for Frontier Field. I think I'm remembering that right.
Yeah, yeah. And then it became not only multi in terms of baseball and soccer, but let's not forget the Rattlers played there as well.
Yep.
And
so, yeah, don't whole thing about, I mean, we look back a lot probably now, we probably shouldn't as much, but
I'm telling you, the Frontier Field was a baseball stadium. It was Steve Donner and Chris Economides who said, hey, you know what? We grew up Lancer fans. Maybe we should, maybe let's try to put a soccer team in there. And that, then the Rhinos started making money for the Red Wings, which is another potential future I think could happen again. But that's just probably my dream. But but yeah, so David and Wendy, you can speak to, you know, again, this money for this soccer stadium has been paid for years.
There's no debt on the soccer stadium.
Right.
There's no debt on the soccer stadium.
There's no debt on the soccer stadium.
Should a soccer stadium have been built, David and Wendy?
If you wanted to have Division II soccer, you have to. By the U.S. soccer, this goes beyond my league, regulates that soccer teams cannot play in non-soccer specific stadiums.
So it couldn't have gone on the way it was.
No, and there's a deadline in which you have to have it or you will not be granted your city a franchise.
Let me just give just a very quick backstory so that listeners understand. So the soccer pyramid, MLS, Major League Soccer, is the top of the pyramid.
Yep.
Next up is Division II and then Division III, and then it trickles down from there. When we purchased the Rhinos, we were a Division III team. The requirements for Division III are different than Division II, as you might expect in any sports. So in Division II, as Wendy said, there were specific requirements, one of which is a soccer-specific stadium, which is why Louisville's getting a new stadium and all these other cities are as well. So the answer is having a soccer-specific stadium in almost every other market makes perfect sense because you have your own stadium. You can control the dates, which is very important. You could have weekends and whatnot. In Rochester, of course, we have the history of what happened in Frontier Field, and everyone says, well, maybe we should have stayed there. So in every world except Rochester, you should have a soccer-specific stadium. In Rochester, we have the benefit of looking back and saying, remember those good old days? And I think that's part of the point that gets there.
But then the other question, David, and I'd love to hear from David and Wendy on this. There's been endless talk about wrong place for a stadium. Do you agree, as the owners of this team, is it in the wrong place?
I may not think it's the right wrong place for it, but if the community doesn't like where it is, I can't control their opinions. What I can say to the community is the myth that we don't have enough parking is wrong. There's plenty of parking. Unfortunately, when the stadium originally opened, the stadium was not complete. The parking was not complete. So it had a perception at that time that was perhaps true, and that no longer is true. There's parking, it's well lit, and there's 14 new wayfinding signs off the 490. So it is hard to dispel those deep-seated problems.
All right, so I'll,
perception.
I'll ask Scott and Jeff in a second their thought. I want to ask David, is it worth going back into a lot of the, I don't know if it's rumors or all these conversations about behind the scenes, lawmakers were making deals about build it here and we'll fund it if you put it here. How much of that is true and how much of that matters anymore?
Well, I don't know how much is true because obviously I wasn't in the room, but I think it matters a lot because everyone looks for excuses for things. And those excuses are the stadium never should have been built there. It should have been built in two blocks closer. It should have been built in a suburb. And what happens is it just gives people reasons to, it's like you're a naysayer. It gives you a reason to say, I'm not going to go because I don't like where it is, or it shouldn't have been built there, and I'm mad at whomever it is. So I think the best way to answer your question is that it's unfortunate it's there, whether you like where it is or it should have been built somewhere else. The stadium exists, and it's sitting there, and we've got it.
And great people work
right.
in it.
Right. I mean,
and
it's
as
so,
a community, we right. should be attending that right. stadium, supporting right. the great well, people that work there and the great soccer right. product we have.
Well, but you know what, Wendy, you got to give them a fan experience, too. That's right. part of it. And let me, Evan, the Dworkins, I wrote about this, Scott wrote about it. And again, I don't want to look back this the whole hour, but I'm telling you right now, the Rhinos' original ownership group wanted to put that stadium right where Brown Square Park is on the other side of the Kodak lot adjacent to Frontier Field. The parking lots would be commingled and used by both teams. That's the way it was done a lot back in the that's the way it is done in Philadelphia and many other cities. And it was in vogue, right, Scott, to have downtown stadium.
Baltimore and Philadelphia, as you mentioned. I mean, Kansas City, it was common to cluster sports and entertainment mm-hmm. zones.
Okay, so then Mayor Johnson at the time says, and we're going to have to, this was all written about, Evan. This is David Gant's comments about where he wanted the stadium are public. They were in the DNC. So Mayor Johnson then says, we have to displace owners of businesses to put that stadium next to Frontier Field. It's going to cost me $750 million to do that. The city can't afford that I'm sorry, $750,000. I think. Yeah. Maybe in this day and age it would.
Right.
Back then, $750K. All right. So he says we can't do that. So then the rhinos say, well, let's look at other sites. So they looked at the Kodak or Elm Grove out in Gates. They like that. David Gant then said the $15 million state grant that's been sitting there for a couple of years now. This took a while. I'm not going to support this thing coming into this soccer team unless you put it in my district. And if you can't put it next to Frontier Field, put it two blocks away on this old site that had chemical issues and water table issues and soil that wasn't stable. And that's why the stadium was built there. The original ownership group wouldn't say that then. And I don't know if they would say it now. They probably would. They did not want it there. David Gant wanted it there.
But it's the hands that it's the hand that the Rochester community's been dealt. So what I can, only thing I can do as an owner, because I can't change the stadium location, is to ask the community to get out of their silos. Mm-hmm. And we're local business people. We're not people that live from afar. And we have kids ourselves that we're raising in this community. And we have another business that we run and employ people. And to think of us for your sponsorship dollars, trade if you're having a corporate outing, if you want to see your business on TV, to get out of your silo and try something different. And the stadium is where it is, Rochesterians, and let's try and make the best out of it.
And whether we're here or not, the stadium's not moving. If we don't play on November 30th, on December 1st, the same exact building is going to be sitting in the same exact spot.
And the city of Rochester is going to have a multi-use stadium, no team at all to play in it. So there's going to be a question on what happens with Capelli Sports Stadium going forward. But listeners, if you're just joining the program, Wendy and David Dworkin are here, owners of the Rochester Rhinos. And last week they set a deadline of November 30th. That's when bills come due for player contracts. They've got to raise $1.3 million in various ways, or this team is done here at least for 2018 and maybe for good. And so let's talk about the kind of the little pie chart that the Dworkins gave us for how this might actually happen. So here's how we get to $1.3 million. And then we'll break it down to talk more about the specific components. $600,000 from a combination of luxury suite sales and at least 2,500 new season ticket holders. 2,500 new season ticket holders. And again, a down payment of $50 is needed to hold those season tickets. $160,000 from sponsors for the Rhinos jersey. Again, you haven't had that the last couple of seasons.
Correct.
So that would maybe raise something like $160,000, and then $540,000 from corporate sponsorship and some portion of Monroe County's hotel room occupancy tax. Let me hit the easy ones first here. Mm-hmm. $160,000 for sponsorship of the Rhinos jersey. Wendy said earlier, you know, the business community needs to know you're there, that there's a return on this investment, that there's a great product on the field. But you tried selling this for $75,000 for the last season, couldn't even get a taker. How are you going to get double?
No,
that?
It's not. It's,
that's not true.
No, so it's still $75,000. So we have all soccer teams have their primary kit, which is the jersey they wear in games.
Yep.
You then have an appearance kit. So when the Rhinos go out and do an appearance, you have something there. You have the rear of the jersey, which is also available, and then you also have the training kit. So when our team comes out to practice before they play their match, they're wearing something different. So basically, it's still $75,000 for what we call the primary kit, which is what we play in, and then the other pieces, which is the training kit, the back of the jersey, and the appearance jersey, add up to $160,000.
Okay.
So we're still at $75,000 for the front of the jersey, and it's just the other ones that are in there. Now, last year we did have someone who supported us for our appearance jersey, and so that's one of the numbers that we have, but the rest were all empty.
Wendy, do you feel the local business community has not been supportive enough on this?
It's obviously, we're here today because we would like more support and more interaction with the local business community. I think there are a lot of companies that do what they can, a lot of great small to medium-sized companies. It's hard to crack into the larger companies that have the largest budgets. Sometimes you just need a chance to get in their door and explain what you think you could bring to them, listen to them and hear what their needs are and what's important to them. But obviously, we would like more community support. I mean, if our sponsorship was on level with other
if our sponsorship was half of what any other team in the league had, we wouldn't have these issues.
That is true.
We are at the very bottom in corporate sponsorship.
And that's even though our sponsorship has greatly increased from year
one. It's dramatically increased from last year to the year that just ended. So we've actually had significantly more sponsors and more companies. But as it relates—
You're still at the bottom.
We're still at the very bottom.
Okay. And then the other quick one is, as we mentioned earlier, I know you don't have a direct number, but when you said 2,500 new season ticket holders are what you're probably going to need if this breakdown works, are you a fifth of the way there? Are you half of the way there? I mean, are you almost?
No.
No, we're not almost there.
If we were at—
I didn't see today's numbers yet. I got them at the end of the day.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would tell you that if we took our season ticket holders and we took where we are, we are probably nowhere near even a third of the way there yet.
Okay. So a ways to go.
But sponsorships include 50, maybe 50 season tickets for a sponsor that spends $100,000, right?
Jeff's right about that.
That's part of the equation
correct.
That is both.
Right, and for us, you know, we've had some reach outs from some companies and from some CEOs that we've spoken to, and, you know, we've basically met either Wendy and I ourselves or our senior staff with most of the corporations in Rochester.
A lot of them.
And it's everything's different. You know, some people, they care more about spots and dots, which is signage. Others care about how you can assist my employee base and what kind of events. We were fortunate enough that each of the last 2 years to have a large corporate outing of 350 people from two different companies. They got to play kickball on the pitch, and then they had, you know, we had hot dogs and hamburgers and things like that. But for us, again, it's a complete puzzle. I mean, literally, it's the pie chart. But the corporations are obviously the ones that support us. We're appreciative of course. But for us, the challenge always remains is we look at other markets and we look at cities that have large corporate support, and it's different here. I mean, Rochester is just a different market.
It is surprising when you look at, let's say, the top 20 employers in Rochester, how few have had interactions with us
or with any local pro sports team.
Right. And it's different.
And it's not just hard for us. This isn't just a Rochester Rhinos thing. I think all minor league sports teams in Rochester have noticed over the past 5 years a shift. I sit on a number of nonprofit boards, and as my role as a board member, I've seen a shift and a struggle even on my nonprofit boards to get people out of their own wheelhouse maybe sometimes and assist in some way.
But they've got to think there's a return on investment, right, Wendy?
I'm all about returning investment to people that support us. No matter how big or small your company is, our conversations start with what problem or what thing are you experiencing that I as an owner or our team can help you with. You know, I've had companies eventually much more sophisticated, you know, than the Rochester Rhinos organization say, you know, you seem to have this millennial thing down and your social media is quite active and robust. That's where we're having a struggle. And luckily, you know, I have people that understand it way better than I do, and I step aside and I have them create something, and that's how we got a pretty major sponsor. We were able to fit a need that they had, and in turn, they supported us, and I think it worked out great for both of us. I just need more of those opportunities to have a conversation instead of, no, we do no marketing budget, or no, we don't do any sponsorships.
Right. And just the other piece is that there's that, of course. And then the other part is the companies in other markets that do it because they're in that market. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot of that. I mean, Nissan does not need to tell the world that they're based in Nashville, Tennessee. I mean, everyone knows Nissan makes cars, just like everyone knows General Electric makes appliances, and they're on Louisville's jersey. So, you know, for us, as Wendy said, we've been out in front of a lot of those folks, and there's been great success stories. The challenge we have, is, as we talked about earlier, is there's a lot of baggage that came with this team. And some of it's great. I mean, its legacy is fantastic, but a lot of it is stuff that we're carrying. I mean, our workman's comp alone is almost $250,000. I mean, think about that. Before we open
that
up,
that wasn't the case 20 years ago either.
No, absolutely not.
No. I have prior owner's
right.
experience.
Right. So you
ratings.
Know, just take that by itself. So before we open the front door, we're basically at $250,000 a year before we do anything. And we've inherited that, and that number will go down a little next year. But, you know, so there are some things that we have to deal with. But, you know, sometimes we're victims of our own successes. And I've heard before, and it's true, goals are exciting. You know, you look at the old Rhinos games and you see Doug Miller scoring a bunch of goals, a guy doing a headstand. I was watching something on social media and they said, you know, you missed the one goal of the month from the Rhinos. And, you know, 0-0 goals are not the most exciting, games are not the most exciting. Winning is
Evan,
exciting.
There was a season.
I like 0-0 games, but go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah.
There was a season, I think it was 2009, where out of the 14 home matches, six of them, almost half, were 0-0 ties. Now, that's a fan base killer.
It is.
So that hurt. I mean, that wasn't just one season where, you know, the Rhinos also went 14 years without a championship. Let's face it, there was a monster created in the late 90s, on the field and off the field. And us, it's one thing we have going against us. Well, yeah, we do have tradition. We have fans who say, well, it's not like it was back at Frontier Field. And that's unfairly judging what the present situation is. Folks, it ain't ever going to be that way.
And there's still fans that are mad that we're not in MLS. I mean, there are people that won't come to a match. I've met people, you know, that have said to me, they'll see me wearing a Rhinos top, and they'll look at me and say, oh, Rhinos, yeah. You a Rhinos fan? I said, yeah, I'm a fan. You work in the front office? I said, yeah. I said, I'm involved in the organization. And they'd say, you know, I won't go to a game. They're not in MLS anymore. I mean, they were never in MLS. Yeah, I know, but they should have been, and I'm mad.
And the fact of the matter is, if they were, just given our demographics, the size of our MSA, you wouldn't have stayed an MLS
team
in Washington.
Look what's going on right now in Ohio.
Right.
I mean,
Columbus, yeah.
They're
a loser team.
I mean, that's, I mean, again, it's...
It's not realistic.
Right.
And the Crew have a stadium in Columbus that was one of the first, if not the first soccer-specific stadium. I used to sit in the north end, and there were really inventive chants, some that I cannot repeat on this station, that they have tradition there, and they're still probably going to lose that team. So this stuff happens here. So... Now what I want to do is I want to move to the part of the conversation that gets a little sticky, and we're going to ask the Dworkins about the government piece. I want Scott and Jeff to weigh in, and then our second half hour, we'll take your phone calls. If you want to weigh in on what you want to see happen here, it's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. The Rhino's trying to raise, by next Thursday the 30th, 9 days from now, the deadline to raise about $1.3 million in various ways. So, yep, they've got to sell a lot more season tickets, get down payment commitments from maybe 2,500 new season ticket holders. They need more corporate sponsorship. They need sponsors for the jersey. And they're hoping for some portion of Monroe County's hotel room occupancy tax or at least some other form of government support. Jeff DeVeronica, Scott Pitoniak, journalists have been doing a great job covering what is going on in terms of government reaction. And none of it to me indicates, and maybe the Dworkins are about to tell me differently, but none of it to me indicates that government is ready to do more. For example, Jim Smith from the City of Rochester, communications director for City Hall, essentially said they already do a lot. They've contributed $1.6 million in the last couple of seasons and that they cannot do more. On the county level, I don't see anything that tells me more should be coming. And you've got Assembly Majority Leader Joe Morelli saying he would not advocate for the state providing some solution, temporary or otherwise. He said the state contributed more than $20 million towards the stadium's construction, convinced at the time the operation would be self-sustaining. And he said, quote, that turned out not to be true. What the resolution is on the soccer stadium, I don't know. You have to have a plan going forward, which would be sustainable, end quote. So Wendy and David, let's start with you. Are we missing it? Is there more government support coming? What's realistic? What's the plan here?
Well, there's the hotel tax, which I just want to explain to the listeners if they're not aware that it is not a tax levied on Rochesterians. What it is when people come into Monroe County and take a hotel room, there's a portion of that bill, I believe it's 6%, that goes to the county. And then
it's $8.1 million.
Yep. The county takes a share of that, and then they allocate a portion to the city of Rochester, which is 1.7.
Correct.
And then the city is allowed to take that 1.7 and distribute it to their facilities as they see fit. Obviously, the city of Rochester owns the...
They own all three facilities.
The convention center, the Blue Cross, and the soccer stadium. And as I mentioned, there is no debt unless something has changed on the soccer stadium.
So, Evan, you tell me how the city of Rochester is about to have an empty stadium with no team and they can't find a half a million out of that motel hotel tax that isn't, that's paid for by people who stay at hotel rooms that don't even live here. How can they not step up and say, here's a half a million. We're giving $700,000 to Frontier Field. We're giving $900,000 to Blue Cross Arena. We're giving, you ready for this one? $3.3 million of that hotel tax from the county goes to something called Visit Rochester. And if I went to 100 people on the street, they'd have no idea what Visit Rochester is. And they can't come up with a half a million dollars, or they're going to have an empty stadium.
All right. So I understand the point Jeff is making, advocating for some of this going to the Rhinos. Now, the city of Rochester, David and Wendy, said, yeah, we control a portion of that hotel tax, but we already contributed $1.6 million in the last two seasons. We can't do more. Are they wrong?
Well, I'd like to clarify that. So
tell them what that's for, Wendy.
The city is responsible for capital improvements to the stadium. And
that they own?
That they own. That is correct. I am just the tenant. And they
bills.
Also pay the utilities.
Right. And they have put in capital. So we
did
get a new Jumbotron, but that was allocated before we bought the team. So that
so
was
when
the
James
club.
Smith, city communications director, says, we've already contributed $1.6 million the last two seasons. We can't do more. What you're saying is that's what they have to do anyway as owners of the stadium.
Well, if
is
we're not
true?
Playing soccer, the lights aren't on as much.
Okay. So, that,
so
yeah.
I mean, so there is
not to be flippant, but it's
no,
true.
No, but I mean, there are some expenses that would go away if we're not playing soccer games, the Rattler games.
And then when it comes to the hotel tax, then maybe they'll argue, well, your attendance is down. You're averaging 2,000 paying fans a game here. Do you have people coming from out of town? Why should you get some of the hotel tax?
So I've got a great answer to that. The hotel tax isn't for the Rochester Rhinos. The hotel tax is for the facility. So we had the Drum and Bugle Corps last year. We used 5,000 hotel rooms for that event. 5,000 hotel rooms, as it was portrayed to me by Visit Rochester.
Over many years.
Yes. Yeah. And that event has been here. It's not here next year or the year after, but it's been here before. The hotel tax isn't for the Rochester Rhinos. The Rochester Rhinos are actually a tenant in the building. But we utilize 300 hotel rooms just for the visiting team. If you look at all the other events that we have at the stadium, that's what the hotel tax is for. So to my mind, it's not just attendance is down, it's the events you have at the stadium. So,
and you're getting zero from the hotel tax, correct?
Zero, correct.
That
okay,
is correct.
So that would not make sense if you're actually filling those hotel rooms every single game, which...
Right.
The visiting team comes whether there's one fan to the stand or 10,000.
Right.
Plus, we have to have a separate hotel for the referees.
Well, okay. Right. And plus, there's events at the stadium, as we talked about, Drum and Bugle Corps and others. So James Smith is accurate in that they do. And I don't know. I mean, the number is the number. So I'll assume that's accurate because there'd be no reason to think otherwise. But that is the OPEX and the CAPEX for the facility. The hotel tax, to my mind, it remains a different number. That is money allocated for hotels that are used in our facility. So, you know, I guess they're two different buckets in my mind.
All right, so let me turn to Scott Petoniak because, Scott, the last time I was allowed to talk to you on the radio, it was back when there were some real conversations about the timeline for the Buffalo Bills in a stadium and how sensitive this is. Now, this is not the same. This is not necessarily apples to apples, but for some fans, all government money for sports is government money, and I don't want it. For others, they might hear the Dworkins and say, all right, they're not asking for a state bailout. They're not asking for just a bailout in general. They're saying, we fill some hotel rooms. We're going to try to fill more, but we already fill some. We're getting zero out of that. Realistically, it's got to be part of the puzzle. Is that different to you? Does it make more sense? Or do you think this lands in the same way that makes people feel uncomfortable when billionaire owners in professional sports at the top level say, build me a stadium?
Yeah. You know, it's different, obviously, you know, comparing you know the Bills situation to this, but I will say this, and again I'm coming at this. Some people will say, well, here's a sports guy, you know, he wants all the sports teams here and so forth. And yeah, I do. I want everything in our community, not just sports and so forth. Let's look at it this way. All right, the Rhinos fold in a couple of in another week. All right, what are you going to do with this building now? Isn't it better to allocate this money now? And again, you know, with the Dworkins fulfilling the other goals they've set here, then to have tumbleweeds, you know, going through that white elephant, which is what it's going
to
become.
That
I mean, why not try to salvage?
Scott, who's the failure going to be on if this happens?
Well, I think in the same way that, you know, we saw this with the recent lease getting done, right? The extension with the Red Wings and the county, right? It would have been a pox on both of their houses, I guess, if it didn't work. But here, I don't blame the Dworkins because, again, I don't think people understand what they inherited, how difficult the situation this was. And I think they have really, really put forth a great effort to try to revive soccer in this town and stuff. But I think it would be both, you know, if the city is just going to let that building go like that, I think it's on them. And I think, yeah, you can say the Rhinos, but I don't think it's just, certainly it's not the current ownership. I think it goes back before that. Now, maybe I don't know how Jeff feels about that, but
let me lay out this reality, Evan, because I really believe this, and if anyone, you know, can change this, it falls back to the city of Rochester, because part of the plan when they put the stadium there was to develop the area. Okay, now whether or not you believe it's safe down there or not, David and Wendy. They know a lot of their fans. I have Facebook comments. I screen grabbed them. I'm going to do a big list of them. When this is all over with, I'm going to show you that the people, there are suburbanites that do not want to go there. They have, some of them have reasons, some of them don't, but they don't. So in 2006, when this stadium opened, and the Rhinos really needed to get, they wanted to get this open. It was their own palace. It was going to be more revenue for them, yada, yada, yada. And they looked around and they saw boarded up houses, not just for 1 year or 2 years or 3 years or four or five or six. Probably the first 7 years of the 11 years of the stadium, the neighborhood needed help. The neighborhood now has changed. A lot of the boarded up houses are gone. They've been replaced by nice, small apartment complexes that have siding and landscaping that would look good in any neighborhood in Rochester, New York, in the area. So the decay and the lack of cleanup or the redevelopment of that area by the city that the city couldn't afford to do hurt and eroded the fan base. Now the fans who don't go there anymore, they don't understand that they don't have to explain the boarded up houses to their children when they drive by the stadium. They don't have to go into a parking lot that's not paved, that's right across the street from the stadium. Those things have been taken care of. Unfortunately, Wendy and David, I think, inherited a team that may very well have been beyond repair. That's what I fear. I fear for this franchise and for this city that the stadium's going to be empty, ultimately because the city of Rochester didn't do its part because it didn't develop the area, and that eroded the fan base.
I can tell you, just based on the email and some of the comments that have come in, there are a number of outdated views of what is going on. People who haven't been there for years but want to tell you exactly what's going on, and that's part of the problem Jeff's hitting on. I am way late for our only break. We're going to do that, and we're coming back to York. The last 15 minutes is all your reaction. So the Dworkins from the Rochester Rhinos are here. Jeff, by the way, I've got to ask David and Wendy before I go to break, because Jeffrey on Twitter says, please repeat the cost of season tickets and where to get them.
Sure. Get them at 454-3000 or rhinosoccer.com. Adult GA season-long tickets, $150, including a replica jersey. That works out to $8.80 for 17 games.
Okay, and again, where can I get
online? 454-3000 or online rhinosoccer.com.
All right, they've got this deadline 9 days from now. We're trying to put $1.3 million together, and if they can do that, maybe they continue here in 2018 and beyond. And if not, maybe they're gone for 2018 and maybe for good. So that's the situation here. Let's get that break and come right back to your comments and phone calls next. Coming up in our second hour, 1 year after white supremacist flyers started showing up on driveways in Pittsburgh and Brighton, things have turned out quite differently, at least not how the creator of those flyers intended. A new organization was formed to celebrate diversity. One of the founders of that, a man of color, was just elected to the Pittsburgh Town Board. We'll talk about his journey and the year since those flyers next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. A number of emails from people who are just saying, you know, cheering on the Dworkins, hoping this happens, get to the finish line. And I've been taking my kids for years. Then we're hearing some pushback, questions from people. So let's just work through all of this in our last 12 minutes or so. Ray in Fairport. Go ahead, Ray.
Yeah, hi. I'm just going to go back about that experience. For me, I would be happy to buy season tickets if we had a system of promotion and relegation. So there's something that the team is playing for. If it does well, it moves up the next division. Right now, I'm used to seeing that kind of stuff going on. when I follow the EPL, for example, and actually our youth teams do that in you know, in the leagues. So I don't know why we can't do that. That would be more exciting. There's something that the team's playing for. There's something that I'm cheering for, right? Instead of every year, how well we just kind of stay the same place. I mean, you know, it's nothing to get excited about anymore. All right.
But why can't we just be the best darn minor league soccer team in the country again? Why isn't that good enough? Because
I've seen that. I mean, we've seen that. Right after a while, it gets kind of, you want to keep the fans interested. It gets kind of boring. And then not these owners, but previous owners, after a while, what's the incentive to buy get the good players or attract the good players? To play in the same league, you just get stuck there. I mean, if it's such a great thing, why is everyone else not doing that? Why are we the only
country that does it?
This is the
problem, David and Wendy. This is U.S. soccer. This is FIFA. They can't solve that.
Yeah, I mean, and I would say to Ray, you know, you still get to play in things like, I think,
U.S. Open Cup.
U.S. Open Cup.
Correct.
You know, those kinds of opportunities are not always there for other minor league sports franchises. So you do get some crossover and some opportunities there as a fan to experience that. I mean, look, Ray, I understand that. I mean, he wants promotion and relegation. That's a real fan right there. Mm-hmm. And I get it. Mm-hmm. I just don't know that
And when U.S. Soccer's talking about it, and there's been a lot of conversation, and the challenge always is how do you deal with the team that pays $150 million today? And, you know, they've talked about U.S. Soccer buying MLS. I mean, there's all these different ideas. But at the end of the day, it would make it a lot of fun. But unfortunately, I have zero control over that one. But I agree with him. Ray's right. I mean, it would make it fun, but we can't fix that. I mean, all we can do is have as good a fan experience in our stadium as possible.
I don't know. Are we ever going to see that here in the United States? I think it would be really tough. You know, I'm just trying to think like the baseball model.
Right.
Well, the Red Wings are great this year. They're going to be in the American League.
Exactly.
I just don't see it working, especially with the money for a major league franchise.
I don't see that anytime soon.
Well, and you'd have to have such a buy-in from so many different groups. Right. You might have a better shot of seeing maybe Division 2 and 3 as potentially promo and relegation. I mean, the dollars between the two franchises are different, are not as vast. I mean, $150 million for Division 1, and maybe it's a baby step. Maybe Division 3 and 2 get relegated up and down. But, I mean, that's something to think of, that they may ponder to start with and satisfy at least a thought.
All right, so here's an email.
Evan, just so some of your listeners understand, the European model is if you're in the minor league and you do really well, you can just play your way up by what you do on the field in the major league. That's not going to happen in this country.
Yeah,
just
I mean,
in case they didn't know.
For a lot of reasons, it's probably just a non-starter for now, Ray. But thanks for the phone call. Here's an email from Pittsford, the My Better Benefits staff, sending a note saying, "We've supported the Rhinos since their inception. We found the current management to be very supportive of the community in return and open to partnerships. We firmly believe that our local government should also be more supportive in the way of revenue and tax sharing to keep this team in Rochester. Our local government made a significant commitment to the Fast Ferry years ago to benefit far fewer." So that's from the MyBB staff there. This is Luke in Rochester on the phone next. Go ahead, Luke.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I've been a resident of Rochester. I'm 27 years old, and it was always, growing up, it was always great going to Frontier Field, and it had a different type of community feel. And I don't think we necessarily get that with the location of the stadium currently. Parking around there, it is available and it is evident, but in some areas where if you want to just go park surrounding, it's not necessarily, I don't think, the safest area, and people don't feel comfortable going in there. So you don't get the same type of feel as you did when you were at Frontier.
Luke, thanks for the phone call. Thoughts on that, David and Wendy?
Well, I will say for the almost 2 years that we've been involved, we've tried to get involved in the neighborhood. We've spent a lot of time meeting at school number 17 in the neighborhood and Charles Settlement House and making the stadium a more welcome place for everybody in the community, not people just driving in. I have developed some great relationships with people in the neighborhood, and a lot of people in the neighborhood do want that stadium to do well because they're employed there. And I can only do what I can to make the stadium and the area surrounding it as welcoming as possible and try and be a good partner and help, you know, the stadium. I'm not going to, as one owner, lessen poverty by myself, but I can do my little piece.
Can I just read a couple things? I know David wants to jump in.
Sure.
Josh writes, "Yankee Stadium, one of the most famous and well-attended in the world, is not in what many people consider a good neighborhood. Rochester suburbanites need to toughen up a little." But then listen to this on Twitter. This comes from Thomas, he says, I have been a season ticket holder for the Rhinos and never once had a problem with parking. Once I even left my trunk lid open, and one of the people living on Broad Street closed it for me. Anyone claiming the neighborhood is unsafe has no clue.
He's right. I mean, I've been there at all odd hours for all different things. And, you know, wherever you are, a crime exists. And that's that whole perception and reality thing that's out there. And again, we can only control what we can do. But frankly, we have 400 employees that, you know, get their livelihood from the stadium operation, not just soccer. And a lot of those people live in the neighborhoods. And I can tell you, when people stole the goalposts, which was the biggest news story of the year about the Rhinos, except for what just happened with us, I can tell you that we found out who took the goalposts from someone in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And those people in the neighborhood have become far more incorporated into what we do at the stadium than certainly my experience from what has been told to me in the past.
All right, Tim in Pittsford says, it's starting to sound like the owners are blaming the community for not supporting this team. I'm assuming us as taxpayers have already contributed to this team in one way, shape, or form. This team has had attendance issues for a while. The owners knew this and still bought the team. I'd really like for the team to succeed and be around forever, but guilting your paying or future paying customers is not the way to run a business. Make the plea for your team, but stop blaming us.
I'm not placing blame on anyone. I would like the community to realize that we're here, that we're an asset. We do the best that we can to contribute back in every way, shape, and form possible, either with the team or with the stadium. And I still often hear, you know, people don't know about us or our schedule. So I'm just trying to ask the community to recognize that we're here and we do good things. And if you like soccer, to come out.
All right, so let's get some final thoughts. I'm going to start with Scott Pitoniak. Rochester is a minor league sports town. I think you wisely pointed out that it wasn't that long ago we were considered maybe the best minor league town in the country. Obviously, that's changed a little bit, but how important is this to our identity? Or maybe it isn't. Maybe that's the change that's happening here.
Well, I think it's important. I think anytime you lose, and we've lost our, you know, lacrosse franchise, I don't think it's a good thing for our community. We're not going to go back to the late 1990s, early 2000s. That's not going to happen. But, you know, we're not talking here, I don't think, about packing the stadium. I think we're talking about a reasonable number. And I think the onus, really, this isn't guilting anybody, but if you're a soccer fan, and even those who go beyond that, if you want professional soccer here, the onus is on you. And I don't think it's a guilting or a blaming thing. It's reality right now.
Okay, Jeff DeVeronica, about 30 seconds. People in Tim and, like Tim in Pittsford think that they're being guilted as fans. What do you say to the fans, Jeff?
I say these new owners put in $3 million. Tim, what have you put in the last decade? I think it has to be a partnership. David said this last week. It has to be teamwork. And if we're ever going to get back there, it can't just be two owners put in $3 million. They need to see something from the community to keep moving on. And I think what we're missing here is that they're not guilting anybody or blaming anybody. They're just saying, hey, we're doing our part. But in order to make the wheel turn, we need other people to do their part too. So I wish them the best of luck.
All right, 90 seconds. David and Wendy, 9 days from now, if you're not at $1.3 million, what happens?
We have to release our player contracts. We have no players. We obviously let our coach go to Pittsburgh, and the team will not be fielding competitive Rochester Rhinos in 2018, much to my dismay.
Could you come back in 2019 or beyond?
We could certainly take a hiatus, and that's one of the options available to us. The question always is, as you take a hiatus, what do you do in that year? The league has already told me, certainly, if that's what we wish to do, we'll remain in good standing. We can certainly do, we'll be part of the league, obviously not playing. But for us, it comes down to our hope and expectation and goal is to literally try to get this done. But as Jeff DeVeronica said, it's a team effort, and we need help, and we're not asking for anyone to do anything they don't feel comfortable doing. We
just my understanding is you're not moving to another city. This franchise,
you mean next
the
year?
Rhinos, are not going to another city next year.
At this point, we have not reached out to any other city, so that would be a safe bet at this point.
Okay, and Wendy, some final thoughts from you for the community then.
I hope the community at large does support us, but one of the reasons why we did this is we didn't want to see another business, because it is a business, leave Rochester. There's a lot of negative sometimes coming out about jobs being lost in Rochester or companies leaving. And we didn't want that to happen with this business. And I hope everything we are experiencing does not prevent other people from getting involved when they see something happening in Rochester that's negative that they think they can turn around. Give up on Rochester.
I'm not here to sell for the Rhinos, but if you're in business or if you're a fan, we've had people asking, you want to contact the Rhinos? You got 9 days to do it. How do you do it?
454-3000 or rhinosoccer.com.
Rhinosoccer.com. Wendy and David Dworkin, thank you for your time. We appreciate
it. Thank you.
And we'll get an update soon here. We're going to know one way or another a week after Thanksgiving. Scott Pitoniak, always great to have you back here on the microphone. Thank you, sir.
Great to see you again, Evan.
And Jeff DeVeronica, nice having you as well, Jeff. I'll see you in studio some other time soon and in the pages of the Democrat and Chronicle. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Evan. Thanks, guys.
All right, we'll see. Short break, more connections coming up.